The hour 10:15 having arrived, we will call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. We do not quite have a quorum yet. As soon as we do, we will officially call the meeting to order to take care of some housekeeping business. What we have today is we have before us House File 1914, a David's Bell Commercial Industrial Properties regarding the commercial statewide business property tax. Originally yesterday I thought that we'd be taking votes on this today with amendments and so forth, but what I've decided to do is go with basically a general overview of the bill as it stands now. We will take testimony, then we will take comments from members. We will be done by noon. I was originally thinking about voting on the bill, having full and free and fair debate as I always do, and we're going to schedule a meeting for tonight. Then I looked at the calendar. I thought might not be the wisest move of a chair in history here, I wouldn't hardly think. So we will be done by noon. That doesn't mean we have to go till noon, but we will take care of going over the bill here today. We'll take testimony, and then we will have discussion from members. But first of all, and again, when we have a quorum, we'll officially call the meeting to order. If we could have House Research describe the bill to the committee as it is, then we will go into folks that have concerns with the bill, and then a long, distinguished list of supporters. So with that, I will turn it to them. Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, I'll quickly go through the elements of the bill as it passed the division. If you look at the bill summary, you can see the overview that sort of goes through the highlights, but I'll go through it on a section-by-section basis. Section 1 essentially reduces the portion of the state general tax that applies to commercial and industrial by $23 million from its Pay 12 level, and then also reduces it by $80 million, which is the amount that's necessary in Section 2 to exempt the first $150,000 market value of each parcel from the state general levy. Then the second thing that it does is it provides that over 12 years the state general tax on CI property will be phased out. The seasonal rec property tax on cabins remains in place as under current law. Section 3 is more or less a technical provision that allows implementing that gets rid of what's now the 95-5 split between the two portions of the tax, the cabin and the CI portion, since that's now fixed as a dollar amount and the CI portion would be phased out. Section 4 repeals the requirement, the exemption from filing for foreign operating corporations, since the bill repeals foreign operating corporations. Section 5 is a corporate income, corporate franchise tax provision that modifies the definition of domestic corporations to provide that some foreign corporations will be treated as domestic corporations, which has the result of requiring them to include their income and apportionment factors in the unitary business's total income and apportionment factors. These are foreign corporations that are either incorporated in a tax haven, which is the list of those countries that are deemed to be tax havens is in Section 6, or they're doing enough business to be located in the tax haven, to be taxed by the tax haven, and they have 20% or more of their income attributable to the tax haven. So that would apply if they're not actually incorporated in the tax haven. The final criterion that subjects a foreign corporation to this domestic definition is if they have 20% or more of the average of their property, payroll, and sales in the United States.
Excuse me, Mr. Michael. We'll interrupt there. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Members, Representative Carlson moves the minutes from February 8th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, we are going to refer to the House Property and Local Tax Division House File 1113, a McFarland bill, House File 1242, a deputy bill. You should have this in your packets if you need more information. We're just moving them to property taxes. House File 2027, a David's bill, House File 2089, a Bill's bill, House File 2090, a Mac bill, House File 2123, a Lemire bill, House File 2156, a Swedzinski bill, House File 2161, an Ornis bill, House File 2165, a Kiefer bill, House File 2189, a David's bill, House File 2224, a Banyan bill, House File 2234, an Erickson bill. Okay, with that, we will continue with a description of House File 1914. Mr. Michael.
Section 6 is the section that contains the list of countries. There are 34 countries listed that are deemed to be tax havens. Section 7 is essentially conformity provision on the higher married standard deduction to the under the individual income tax. So it conforms to the federal rule that for tax year 12 makes the married standard deduction twice what the single deduction is. Section 8 modifies the subtraction. Subtractions as part of the elimination of the marriage penalty. Section 9 is the corporate additions, and this Section 9 and 10 are part of the repeal of foreign operating corporations, where it repeals the deemed dividends and the add backs for that income. Section 11 makes conforming changes to the calculation of the marriage credit to reflect the essentially the conformity on the marriage standard deduction. And let me back up on Section 8. The thing I should point out, Section 7 conforms to the federal elimination of the marriage penalty on the standard deduction for tax year 12. Section 8 also essentially for tax year 13 and going forward provides, even when the federal marriage penalty relief on the standard deduction is not in effect, that Minnesota would allow married couples an equivalent deduction to increase their standard deduction, so that essentially this would go on into the future, even if the federal government does not extend its marriage penalty relief under the standard deduction. Going back to Section 12, Section 12 is really the operative provision for the FOC changes. It repeals the 80% treatment of deemed dividends under the dividend deduction. Sections 13 and 14 are changes to the property tax refund for renters that changes the percentage of rent that's deemed to constitute property tax from 17% to 15%. Section 15 is a increase in the maximum property tax refund for homeowners that applies at income levels above $37,208 of household income. Section 16 provides a new renter's property tax refund schedule for senior and disabled renters. And Section 17, and both Sections 16 and 17 effectively reduce the allowable renter's refunds for under the property tax refund from current law, but Section 16 preserves a larger refund for senior and disabled renters. Section 18 eliminates the inflation adjustment for the renter's refund. Section 19 modifies the appropriation to reflect that. Section 20 freezes the LGA payments to cities at their current calendar, at their current level for calendar 13 and following payments. Section 21 increases the targeting refund rate from 60% to 90% for taxes payable in 2012 only. Section 22 transfers $4.3 million from a special revenue fund that the Department of Revenue has that reflects the amounts that they've offset for collecting the cost of administration of local sales taxes. Section 23 is an administrative provision since those renters' property tax refund changes that were made that I described earlier apply to rent paid in 2011 for rent credits that are paid in 2012. This is an administrative provision that directs the Commissioner of Revenue to recalculate those so that the taxpayers or the claimants don't have to file new refunds, but the Department of Revenue would recalculate those and send them to the renters. Section 24 is the repealer. There are two sections related to the repeal of FOCs, and there's also a repeal as part of the LGA formula since the bill freezes the LGA formula at the current amounts.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. We will start with testifiers. There are two that we have on our list, and we'll ask if there are more, but we have two on our list that have concerns. We could, I'll start out with Nan Madden and then Steve Peterson. So if we could go with Nan for her testimony first. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Sure. I'm Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project, and I do have two handouts, if a page could help me with those.
Certainly. We could get a page to hand out, a couple handouts here.
Members of the committee, as I mentioned, my name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. The Minnesota Budget Project is an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, and we provide nonpartisan research, analysis, and advocacy on budget and tax issues, with particular attention to the impact that state fiscal decisions have on low and moderate income Minnesotans. We strongly oppose this bill's deep cuts to the property tax refund for renters, commonly called the renter's credit. The property tax refund for renters has been effective in meeting its goal, which is to reduce the regressivity of the property tax system. In the 2011 omnibus tax bill, the renter's credit was cut by $26 million for fiscal 2013. That's a 13% cut from base funding. Nearly 300,000 Minnesota households were harmed by this cut, losing an average of $87. Now this bill proposes a nearly 40% cut on top of the cuts passed last year. Close to one in four participating households would lose their entire credit, and the average credit would be cut by $221. So that's a total of roughly $300 lost to these households when combined with the cuts passed last year. That is a lot of money for these families. We have seen how cuts to the renter's credit impact people all across the state. In 2010, the share of rent considered the renter's share of property tax, which is the starting point for calculating the credit, was brought down to 15%, as in this bill. In 2010, renter's credit payments fell by $42 million compared to the year before. And I've provided you with a handout. I've provided you with two handouts. One of them, the one that's titled Renter's Credit Cuts Felt Across Minnesota, shows how the impact of that reduction in 2010 was had an impact in residents of every county of the state. I've also provided you with an updated fact sheet that you've seen from us before that just shows how people all across the state in each county receive the renter's credit and the average amounts. The piece I gave you with the impact from 2010 only gives you part of the picture of what would happen in this bill, because this bill goes well beyond those cuts that were passed in 2010. In particular, you'd see a much larger number of people losing eligibility for the credit under this bill than you saw in 2010. So clearly, last year, tough choices were made in order to balance the state's budget, and Minnesota's renters made a contribution towards balancing the budget. But that is not the situation that we're in this year. This year, the state has a short-term surplus, and this bill asks Minnesota's renters to pay for the phase-out of the general levy for businesses. In previous years, you've heard Minnesota renters come before you and talk about the difference that the renter's credit makes in their lives, about the basic needs they use that credit to pay for, including school clothes, car repairs, and medicine. We think what Minnesota businesses need right now is customers, and the renter's credit helps Minnesota's renters continue to be good customers in our local businesses. But this bill cuts $70 million a year in tax refunds from people who spend those dollars in our local economy. We think low and moderate income renters have already made an important contribution to balancing the state's budget, but we think if you want to phase out the state general ed levy, you should find a more broadly based way to pay for it. We shouldn't single out Minnesota's low and moderate income renters to carry that load. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Madden? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Madden, in other states that have a renter's credit, what is the percentage?
Ms. Madden?
That's a good question, Representative Erickson. I do not know that off the top of my head. I think we can get that information to you.
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate that information.
Thank you. I believe we have a handout.
Do we?
We'll get one. Thanks. We'll get one for you. That's a very important question. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not sure I'm understanding the bill correctly. So, and maybe either Ms. Madden can answer this for me or someone else. So we're used to be that you got 19% if you were a renter on your taxes, and then we switched it to 17%. This bill proposes to go to 15%, and as a landlord, my taxes are going up. Is it proposed that these... that the revenue for extra revenue that we get from lower income renters goes now to me as a landlord, or does it go to other commercial industrial properties in the state?
Ms. Madden?
Representative Lesh, so this bill does, as you mentioned, bring that percentage of rent down to 15%. It also reduces the income at which households are eligible, brings it down pretty considerably for households that don't have seniors and disabled people in them, and provides a new schedule for those folks, so they also take a reduction in their credit from that in addition to the changing the percentage of rent. So there's a whole number of changes, and it also eliminates the indexing for inflation. So it kind of cuts the renter's credit in, I'm not sure if that's three or four different ways, but it's substantially larger than what we've seen in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so I understand that. I'm not sure how much that raises, what the revenue note is on that. Maybe staff could answer that. But we're taking the money away from lower income renters. Who's getting the money? Is my question. Who gets it?
Is that?
Representative Lesh, in this.
We have an amendment, I think.
Ms. Madden.
In this bill, that cut to the renter's credit is paired with other provisions that lower property taxes in the state levy,
Mr.
statewide
Michael, could
levy.
You help out a little bit?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, the property tax reduction goes to the state general tax that applies to the commercial and industrial property, which typically is things like offices and retail and industrial. It does not reduce the state general tax does not apply to apartments or non-homestead residential properties. So the tax this will not provide relief to the either apartments or rented single family homes and duplexes and so forth. If that's your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Michael. I appreciate the answer to that question. I guess my question is, as a landlord, now I'm thinking that my tenants are going to be getting less money. They'll have less money to pay me. That'll impact the market rate for my rents, and so I guess I would think that that money that you take away from the tenants would go to landlords so they could support it, but as I hear, it's not, because then the money's just going to be coming from landlords to business owners. So I'm wondering if this If this is just a tax increase on business owners, Ms. Madden, would you comment on that?
Ms. Madden? Is this a tax increase on business owners?
The answer is yes, Ms. Madden. Oh, so did I say that out loud, Mr. Chair? I'm sorry.
Then I'll take the opportunity not to answer it.
That's it, Mr. Chair.
You've never had a thought you haven't uttered.
Sorry.
Fine. Okay, any other questions for Ms. Madden? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know it's hard to get, you know, all the data that we want, but since we're not going to act on this bill today, and the handouts that were provided are actually about the change from 2009 to 2010, and this is a much more dramatic change in terms of the number of people drop off and the amount lost, I'm wondering if we might have time before we take up the final bill to have an updated listing that actually shows what the impact of this bill might be.
Yes, we will.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Madden? If not, we'll go to Mr. Peterson.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madden.
Thank you.
Mr. Steve Peterson, if you could join us, please, and share your concerns. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Chair Davids, members of the committee, my name is Steve Peterson here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I have just a few brief comments about the bill today.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. First, I'd just like to say that the exclusion for the first $150,000 from the state CI business property tax will be welcomed by many businesses throughout Greater Minnesota. And secondly, that our cities will welcome the free, or many of our cities welcome the freeze to the LGA and what each individual city gets. However, we would still support allowing the formula to run for those cities who would get an increase, so you would get the greater of either what the formula provides or the freeze, which would cost roughly $12.5 million. finally, we do not support eliminating the formula before a new formula has been put together. We strongly believe that we need to make sure that there is a formula there for the rationale of why we have or how the aid is distributed. And we would support working with, of course, the legislature and governor to create the new formula, but we do believe strongly that we need to maintain the formula up until the point we have a replacement one. And finally, we are very concerned about the phase-out of the statewide business property tax in the outgoing years without a replacement revenue source. We do feel that the state is projected to have a deficit the next biennium, and until we have a stable structural budget, we shouldn't be reducing revenues until we reach that point. With that, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. Any questions for Mr. Peterson? Representative Canute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Peterson, you said you support the $150,000 exclusion. And, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to understand the market value exclusion from last session. I spent a lot of time with one of my local city managers who helped me really finally understand it after a couple of meetings. If that $150,000 exclusion, is that just at the state, that with the state levy, or will it impact the tax base in the local level, and will it shift taxes more onto the homeowners? Just clarify that a little bit more?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, they're doing is because they're reducing the exclusion just on the statewide business portion of it, and then they are reducing the rate, what it basically does is collect less money, but it will not have the shifts that were occurring with the market value credit exclusion. If I'm wrong, someone can correct me.
Representative Knuth? Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure whether this is for Mr. Peterson or perhaps for staff. I had a bill a couple of years ago to eliminate the property tax on the first. It was either $100,000 or $150,000 of CI property as well. And what that did actually was shift within the statewide property tax so that it moved the property tax liability up to properties valued above $150,000. Can I ask anybody who wants to answer, is that at least the initial dynamic here, recognizing that the phase-out is also in the bill?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, no. I do remember your bill, and it had that effect because you didn't change the levy. Mm-hmm. This bill reduces the levy to offset the reduction in the base, so there won't be any shifting as a result of the reduction in the base.
So, Mr. Chair, then it's just the renters who are paying for this.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, come on.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, I will observe that money is fungible, and there's a fair amount of other money in here, including from FOC, so I will leave it to you and the other members of the committee to determine where the money is coming from to pay for.
Representative Dabney, had I not deferred, we never would have had the term fungible in tax committee. Representative Dabney.
I think we now know, again, why Mr. Michael has the job he has. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here, Mr. Peterson. You know, on this issue, I you know, you're here representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and I think as just the questions just show that the chair did pay for that portion, that, different than Representative Dabney's bill, which was a shift within it, and so he dropped it. But my suspicion is some of those business taxes that made it in and property taxes might come out later. So then I think we would be just down to the renters paying for the tax cut if that's how it plays out as we get to amending the bill. But Mr. Peterson, have you looked at the simulation on the net effect of the bill when it's fully phased in on Greater Minnesota versus the metro? And can you comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, yes, I have. And, of course, it has a very different look when it is fully phased in, where the bulk of the tax relief does come from the seven-county metro area, which, as we stated, we don't support any type of reduction in revenue and that is not structurally balanced because we feel that it could eventually affect the programs that benefit Greater Minnesota, in particular, local government aid. So we do not support the full phase out of the statewide business property tax.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, hopefully you will get to at some point today or whenever you're taking up the bill again to have staff walk through that simulation. I know it's been done both in the current, you know, year, which the initial impacts, the way you've structured the bill, helps with those smaller businesses. But at the time of the full phase-in, with a loss of $1.6 billion per biennium for the bill, the tax relief is overwhelmingly to the metro. Relative to the rural, about two-thirds of the money goes to the metro, and I should note, as a metro member, well, that sounds like a good deal, but it's not to any homeowners. It's to the businesses. So as we walk through it in property taxes, folks should know that rural members, sort of, their renters get to help pay for tax cuts at the Mall of America, and, you know, I think members need to understand how this bill actually works. So when you get rid of the CI property tax of $1.6 billion out of a biennium taken out of the state budget, two-thirds of that money benefits commercial properties in the seven-county metro. And within the seven-county metro, it's disproportionately a very few cities that take the bulk of that money. And I think since we all are familiar with the metro, we can imagine what those cities are. I mean, they're Minneapolis-St. Paul and a corridor from Bloomington sort of out to Eden Prairie and Minnetonka and Edina. So that's the bulk of where the money goes in tax relief. And it's not to the homeowners in the metro. It's to the commercial industrial properties at the expense of the renters at this point. So I do think, in fairness, before people actually take this vote, they need to look at the runs. And if you do that, if you take the time to look at that in the property simulation, I think you'll be amazed what it looks like when the bill is fully phased in. So I appreciate that you're here to represent one part of the state, and I do think those members need to understand the impacts on them as the bill phases in.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Peterson, representing the coalition, and in conversations I've had with my business owners over the last several months, they keep asking me why we can't reduce spending. And so I want to know, does the coalition have a recommendation for ways to reduce spending? So maybe we wouldn't have to do some of this other that we're doing, but simply take a look at what we spend. And could you give us some recommendations from the coalition?
Peterson. Chair Davids, Representative Erickson, you're talking at the state level, I'm assuming.
Yes.
And no, we don't have any formal recommendations for you, sorry.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, I would like Mr. Peterson to delve into that and bring us one recommendation. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And since we're getting into the financing and cutting government, Representative Erickson, I mean, I think we need to also weigh the fact that while the renters are contributing, you know, $70-80 million a year in the first few years to pay for this. When we get to that $1.6 billion loss to the general fund, when it's fully phased in at the end of the full phase back, the renters are nowhere near able to absorb that. And so as we get to the out years, Mr. Peterson is correct. It puts at risk absolutely a lot of other things, and I think there might be more people at the witness table if they realized how much money this bill might take away from future abilities to fund education, health care, other key issues. And so I think we have to recognize that this bill, at least as it currently stands, does not provide a financing source in the out years.
Any other questions for Mr. Peterson? Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you.
We'll now bring up, I've got three categories today. Usually I have with concerns and supporters, but today we're going to put another category, support and oppose my bill, all at the same time. So we'll bring up Mr. Gary Carlson from the League of Minnesota Cities. I don't mean to say, you don't put opposition on here, it's concerns. Opposition is so harsh, isn't it? Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee. Sir, please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, and as you indicated, I'd like to say a few words in support of portions of the bill and then to raise some concerns with other portions. First of all, let me say that we generally support sections the PTR and the targeting refund increases that are included in sections 15 and 21 of the bill. As our city officials considered the issue of providing taxpayer relief and what has happened over the last couple of years with the funding of the old homestead credit, our city officials decided that we would support providing direct relief where city officials or city governments, county governments are not in between the taxpayers in the state of Minnesota. So we generally support providing relief through sections 15 and 21. Let me say that we have no specific position on the $150,000 exclusion for small business property, but let me say that as we traveled the state last fall, I heard from a lot of our city officials concerns raised about the level of property taxes on some of their small businesses, and I think that a lot of our city officials would appreciate the structure of this, especially noting that this does not impact local property taxes. It does not shift local property taxes. The way this is structured, as was previously indicated, means that these small businesses will receive some benefit without having any direct impact of shifting either of the state tax or of local property taxes. To raise some concerns, we cannot support the LGA freeze that's in the bill nor the repeal of the existing formula and the appropriation until we have a replacement in place. Representative Runbeck is chairing an LGA study work group that will have some recommendations on a replacement formula, and we have strongly supported the work of that effort, which we'll meet again on Friday, and we would really like to see that formula continue to function, noting that we have winners and losers, but the functioning of the formula would make more sense, we think, under current law. And then finally, we don't have any position on the phase out of the overall state business property tax, but we do have positions noting and encouraging stability in the state budget, and we do have to raise concerns with the long-term hole created in the state budget. One way or the other, that's going to have to be addressed, and we just want to go on record noting that it does create, obviously, an out-year or out-biennium problem in the state budget. Mr. Chair, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. They've been bringing that to my attention, too. Okay, with that, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the testifier, does your organization have a position on reinstating the market value homestead credit?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, we, as I indicated in my first comments, we prefer to have property tax relief provided directly to the taxpayer. So if you wanted to restore a homestead credit, as long as it doesn't involve cities or counties, well, I shouldn't speak on behalf of counties, but as long as we're not in the intermediary in the system, we would be okay with that. But the existing structure of the homestead credit is not something we would support because it was not fully funded for all of our cities in the last 2 years and several, over 100 of our cities for most of the 10 years of its existence. So the answer is the exact structure of the existing program, no. If you want to structure something differently to provide it directly to taxpayers, we would be fine with that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Carlson, when the Democrats were in charge, they sought to repeal the tax credit on organ donation because apparently organ donors weren't paying their fair share. Does your organization have a position on making organ donors pay more money to finance property tax assistance?
Mr. Chair, Carl? Representative Garofalo, no, we do not.
Thank you.
Garofalo. President Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Carlson, and I think you know I respect you, and I think you do a great job for your organization. And, you know, so this really isn't about you per se and what you just said, but, you know, I just want members to think long and hard about the testimony. The payment to individuals for property tax relief, I mean, who's not for that? And contrary to what's been stated repeatedly, the individuals in the tax system were never shorted market value homestead credit by Governor Plenty, by Republicans, by Democrats. The payments to the individuals always took place until last year when it was eliminated. Who got shorted in the deal, and therefore mayors and city council members don't like this, is some of the cities had to take a little bit of a cut because other cities lost their LGA. So that's kind of how it went. You lost some LGA in tough times or some county aid. And when you looked at the Eden Prairies and the Bloomingtons, boy, they don't get any aid. So you had to take a little bit of their market value credit. And so the mayor of that city council didn't like it. But the constituents who live there all got their homestead credit. Nobody ever took it from a single citizen. 95% of all Minnesotans received this credit. And last year it was eliminated forever. So this, it was a payment to individuals. Some mayors and council members got stuck in, boy, now we're going to have to raise a little taxes or cut something. But the individuals all got their homestead credit. And there is nobody in either party who has ever cut it to individuals until last year. So we're hearing this sort of thing that, you know, it's always getting cut. Well, that's not accurate. It was absolutely gotten rid of. But I want to, you know, just bring up something Mr. Carlson said, and this is a common refrain bipartisanly. I say it, Republicans say it, Democrats say it, Governor Plenty said it, Governor Ventura said it, is we like direct payments to individuals. Mr. Carlson just said it. That's better. Then do we oppose LGA? Does the League of Minnesota Cities think we should not have LGA? Because that's not a direct payment to individuals. So if we want to go to a property tax relief system that's all individual payments, we should abolish local government aid, and we should abolish fiscal disparities, and we should get rid of county program aid, and we should get rid of pension aids and disparity reduction aids. And our billion-dollar system we have a year is a blend of payments to individuals through circuit breakers, property tax refunds, targeting, senior deferral, and the market value homestead credit, which is now gone. I think it's difficult when people start saying we just prefer individual payments. Then you better be willing to stand behind you can abolish LGA, because LGA is not in a payment to individuals. It's payment to mayors and city council members. And I think one of the things that's been worked out here over the years is we have a blend in the state of Minnesota that gives direct payment to individuals based on the ability to pay. That was the homestead credit, now gone. We have the circuit breaker where that's still there, but I mean, you know, which I think the circuit breaker is fantastic, and we should beef that up. But if we're going to be all about payments to individuals, folks better be really willing to get behind abolishing LGA, because the LGA costs the same as market value homestead credit over a biennium. And fiscal disparities cost even more than that. And that's just a payment from one city's tax base to the other. So, you know, I think the system is a big, complicated system with lots of things going on to address a lot of needs, and I don't want to put Mr. Carlson in a tough position, but I know his organization enough to know that they support local government aid, and that is not a payment to individuals. So I think people need to think about this. The market value homestead credit was received by 95% of our constituents and has never in the history of the state been taken away from individuals until last year. Never. And Representative Garofalo, you can laugh and roll your eyes, but I will tell you exactly how it worked. When it's been cut, it goes to individuals, and then there's how much more will the cities, counties, and schools be reimbursed. Schools were never cut a nickel, ever. Now all school districts lost it. You're the education chair. You should know that and care deeply about that. No school district in the state of Minnesota has ever lost a nickel of homestead credit, ever. Never, ever, never. Nobody, either party. It's all gone. There were a couple counties in some tough years who lost a little bit because their net tax capacity, there wasn't enough to take away from them. The sometimes not reimbursing some of the market value credit was a way to make the wealthier cities chip in a little bit to tough times. So next tough time, the wealthier cities aren't going to be able to chip in anything because there's nothing there. So it's going to be more LGA cuts, deeper and stronger, more county program aid cuts. And that's fine. I think if people want to say we don't like the homestead credit and we stand by it and we got rid of it, then have the guts to say we want to get rid of local government aid too. because that's not a payment to individuals. And so that's coming next. I mean, I think, you know, people want to characterize the homestead credit as this thing that just went to the mayors and city councils. You know, if everybody in my district got $300 and the city council, instead of getting a $300 reimbursement for every household, instead got a $295 reimbursement, sure, they didn't like it, but they still got most of it. And the facts are the facts. I mean, we, you know, if people want to say what really happened with this program since 1960, whatever, since it's, you know, it's changed its name a few times, and say, oh, they never paid it anyhow, the cities didn't get it, they don't want it, they don't care about it. It's actually not true. There are a few wealthy cities who would lose 100% of their market value homestead credits, so that when other parts of the state lost their LGA, some cities lost some market value homestead credit. It's 100% of their payment. It was less than 1% of their budget. As we went through the deficit fights, cities like mine and Representative Loons would lose all their market value homestead credit, and we're still relatively significantly better similarly situated than all of you. So if you took away our homestead credit, we might lose 1% of our city's budget. The mayor and city council, our residents received the checks. Our city councils didn't get the refill, but that might be 1% of their budget. When your mayors and councils lost their LGA, got their LGA cuts, they might lose 10% of their budget. So you've now made it, you know, if we don't bring back the homestead credit, you're going to make sure that the wealthier cities are going to be even wealthier. Because that was paid to individuals, and it was based on your home's value. And so, I know people want to tell a story about what happened to the homestead credit in a different way than really happened. But of the about 40 years we have this program, there's been about 8 years of it that some cities were cut something. Many cities were cut nothing. And all of the individuals in the cities, the 5 million people who live in this state, weren't cut anything. But the mayors were mad about it. So if you all want to take your mayors and council members, your 7 elected officials, over your residents, that's up to you. But I've been a Bloomington City Council member, and I'll pick the 90,000 residents of Bloomington over the mayor and the city council. And you know, maybe people still don't understand what happened last year and want to reframe it. But homeowners lost their homestead credit forever. And we have a careful road to go down when we say we should only have individual tax relief, because the League of Minnesota Cities and other organizations who are here in the audience, that says we shouldn't fund their non-individual payments to their cities. And I appreciate the time, Mr. Chair. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding still this year and a lot of denial about what happened last year.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. And the last 15 minutes had absolutely nothing to do with my bill. Representative Garofalo.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe, Mr. Michael, you could just cover this for the Market Value Homestead Credit Program. When was that created? How many years was it in existence? And third question is, how many years did the legislature actually pay its bills?
6 years.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, the latest incarnation or whatever, the current or the just now repealed version of the market value credit was enacted as part of the 2001 property tax restructuring. And so it was in effect for, I don't know what that is, 8 or 9 years or something like that. If memory serves me correctly, there was 1 year in which the state paid every, you know, dollar amount of the entitlement that was owed to cities and counties. As Representative Lencheski points out, I think that schools received their full reimbursement in all those years. In many of those years, the way the legislature cut aid to cities and counties was that the algorithm was that you first cut LGA, and if you did not have enough to cut LGA based on levy plus aid, then you cut market value credit. And as a result of that, some of the cities that did not have much LGA or no LGA got their market value credit cut. The last year, they changed the ordering and cut market value credit first rather than LGA, and that's why there was, you know, as Mr. Carlson testified, every city got their market value credit cut because the ordering got changed. And I guess just also to follow up on what Representative Lencheski was saying, there was an old homestead credit that was enacted, I think, in 1967, that was in place for through 1989, and then after that there was something that was called homestead and agricultural credit aid, or HACA as everybody referred to it, that was in effect from that period through the 2001 time frame. But each of those was calculated somewhat differently, and so it's not clear whether you would call, you know, any of them. Right.
Representative Groffel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and my friend Representative Lencheski. I just can't believe that I heard you say, or maybe I'm paraphrasing, that you thought that this program was working, that the property tax statements the citizens of Minnesota were getting had lies on them. They were getting a credit, or falsely being claimed they were receiving a credit that was not being allocated. It was a complete fault. When you were chair of this committee, we had a hearing on this issue. And on a bipartisan basis, we recognized the fact that the property tax statements were lies. And so our definition now of what an effective program is that credits that are not going to taxpayers, that are not being spent by the state of Minnesota, are effective programs. That's what was happening under the old program. And you can shake your head, but that's what it was. The money was not being allocated by the state of Minnesota. The citizens were not receiving a tax credit. That is the fact.
Does anybody have any comments on my bill?
Mr. Chair.
Well,
I've got Representative Gottwald.
Well, Mr. Chair, I won't ask for equal time. I was on the list, I think.
Yeah,
right? You're keeping the list? Good. Thank you.
Yep.
Just to set a couple things straight, Representative Lencheski, you said it's permanent, it's gone forever. And we all know that no legislature can tie the hands of the next legislature. So the next legislature, if they can find the money, can go ahead and reinstate it if they want. If they want to reinstate what Representative Garofalo just described as a broken commitment, a broken program, go ahead. I mean, that's fine. What we need is comprehensive tax reform. We've talked about it. We haven't seen it. But we really need to change these kinds of things. Also go back, Mr. Chair, if I can, to correct some of the history. This was made necessary, this whole deal at the end of the process for our state budget that we're currently under, was made necessary because somebody didn't want to reduce the increase in state spending sufficiently to keep these things off the table. Governor Dayton agreed to this. And it is what happens when you make sausage at the 11th hour. And it's what happens when you aren't willing to acknowledge you're making spending commitments you cannot keep with money you don't have. Then you start doing this kind of stuff. But to say that this program worked or wasn't broken or wasn't messed up or very poorly understood by taxpayers and renters and others is ludicrous. I mean, this sort of thing needs to get corrected. The tax system in the state needs to be simplified and clarified so that people understand where the money's coming from and where it's going. And, you know, so we can argue endlessly about this sort of thing. But, you know, that is the reality of why this happened. And the need for comprehensive reform has never been clearer. I think you underscored that, Representative Lencheski. But let's be clear, the governor agreed to this crazy thing because he would not, and frankly, the other side of the aisle, would not agree to greater reductions in the increase in state spending, not the decrease, not cuts, but the increase in state spending.
Representative, I'll put you on the list, Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chairman, we're going to continue on with this discussion. I have a question about your bill, but
okay. You got a question about my bill?
I'll wait for this.
No, you're next on the list. What's the question? No, we're going to. Okay, we'll come back. Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know, you know, members are not enjoying this process right now. Mr. Chair, this is all about your bill. You are now choosing to find $800 million a year, $1.6 billion of biennium in new property tax relief. First of all, not paid for, not for homeowners. And, you know, we just got through this deficit where we needed tobacco bonds and a school shift to deal with a $1.5 billion hole. We're just going to come up with a new $1.6 billion hole in this bill, not pay for it, and all the benefits are going to fall to businesses over homeowners. So, I mean, this is all about your bill, and for anyone who thinks that these are not related or represent Gottwald, you will have an opportunity to vote very soon, if not today, on whether or not you think the homestead credit is a better idea than this one.
So there are plenty of ways to find money. We took that vote in property taxes. We'll be all taking that again, and you can decide if you prefer this versus homeowner, the homestead credit. But Representative Garofalo, you said it again when you closed that the individuals never got paid this. And again, the individuals always got paid this.
No, they didn't.
And if, Mr. Chair, if you want to ask a nonpartisan person to explain it, I've tried repeatedly, and I maybe I'm not being clear, but Representative Garofalo, go get your property tax statements on your house for the last 20 years and look and see if you got it. And tell me when it says zero. The mayor of Farmington or Northfield, I'm not sure where you live, might have sometimes not gotten all of it, and he was mad about it. But you, Representative Garofalo, you got your homestead credit. You got your homestead credit. So, and I acknowledge there's a dishonest part where you back end it and you stick it to the city. Same as when you stick it to a city by cutting their LGA. This BIT program has been around for most of the 40 years, as you just heard. It's had different names. It's been called different things. HACA, homestead credit, market value homestead credit, market homestead credit. These are all just different names to do the same things. They were direct payments to individuals to help lower their property taxes. And sometimes some cities didn't get some of it. And I will tell you, in the 2001 property tax reform, where it got its new iteration, I sat on that conference committee. Ron Abrams dreamt this up. This was passed so mostly that the suburban members who, due to the new tax reform, as it played out, the suburbs were going to see skyrocketing property taxes. So the market value homestead credit was brought back in to acknowledge that there had to be a way to assist with that. It was means tested, and that's why it's still to this day a bigger portion of it goes to rural Minnesota. But you just said again that, you know, we haven't been paying individuals this, and individuals don't get this, and that is not accurate. Every single year, our residents get the homestead credit. Get your tax form out. Take a look. Your home is this. Your taxes are this. Your taxes are lowered due to the homestead credit by this. Homeowners never lost it until last year's bill, ever. Under either party. And I am ready to hear somebody say that that's not accurate. That's nonpartisan. The Department of Revenue, you know, the former Commissioner of Revenue for Governor Plenty is in the room.
Personally,
individuals did not lose
it. Say that the individuals did not lose it, but because the cities did, that they raised the levies, and then the individual homeowner had to pay more anyways. Would that be fair?
Many cities cut spending. Exactly what you would want as a response. My city always did.
Here's what we're going to do. This has been just a barrel of fun. We have a someone that's testifying. We do have people who have driven in from a ways to testify, and so we're going to. Were you done?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the front row seat for the discussion.
Gary, get out of here.
Mr. Carlson's done. Okay, we're going to go. We can have the discussion here later. But we do have people that are here to testify. I want to hear from them first, and then we will hear from. And we're not voting, so nobody's being cut off or anything like that. Okay. Patty Nauman, Metro Cities, if you could please join us, if you dare.
I'll wait.
After heard that, let's go through all the testifiers, and you're first, Representative Paymar, and then Representative Portman was next. To my bill, Ms. Nauman, please identify yourself and who you represent for the record, please.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. To your bill, Mr. Chair, we do not have a position on the. Phase out of the statewide levy. I can tell you that our policies do not support having this levy be extended to other classes of property. That's been a longstanding policy of Metro Cities, but we do not have a specific position on the phase out. I would echo Mr. Carlson's comments on the freezing of LGA. We would prefer to have the LGA reform groups, working groups, continue their work on this issue and let the formula function as it is. So I would echo those comments made earlier, but I appreciate the time to comment today.
Any questions, Ms. Nauman? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we will now go into supporters of House File 1914. And some, because of what happened in property taxes, they were supporters. Now they are supporters and have concerns about parts of it. But we'll go to Pat Massia. If you could please join us.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good morning.
State your name for the record.
My name is Doug Fulton. I am with Cushman & Wakefield Northmark, and I work in the commercial real estate business. My primary work is in assisting companies, large and small, with site selection and lease transaction work, but I'm also very active in our industry association, NAOP, which represents the thousands of businesses who are tenants in the commercial real estate and the buildings that our members own and manage. Thank you for voting last session to completely phase out the state general tax. You must know how important this issue is to the thousands of businesses and job creators working in our state. I'll make a few points, and then I'll ask Pat Masha from Duke, and also representing NAOP, to provide some additional industry perspective. For Minnesota's thousands of job creators, large and small, cost really does matter. And one of the costs that matters most are the fixed costs over which businesses have no control, such as property taxes that they must pay on buildings they lease or they own. I would like to stress there is little or no relationship between a building's market value and the size of a business that occupies space and pays that tax. In fact, many small businesses, relatively small businesses in terms of sales, number of employees, or occupied space, are located in large, high-valued tax buildings such as downtown towers or suburban office parks. If policymakers are truly interested in providing help and relief to Minnesota's job creators, please keep in mind that the state general tax is the one tax that all businesses must pay, whether they're large or small, whether they make money or not, and whether they lease or own their building. It is a fixed cost over which they have no control. In my work, we spend a lot of time with companies helping them understand their occupancy costs. When a company leases space or when they own a building, the occupancy cost includes construction to build out their space. It includes their rent or their mortgage over a period of time, and it includes their operating expenses. That last item, operating expenses, is made up of the cost, the building expenses, and taxes. And those taxes are a cost that have continued to increase every year, and their cost to businesses simply don't have any control over. And one of the challenging issues for companies and job creators today is that as those costs increase each year, it makes it more difficult for those companies to expand and invest in other areas such as additional employees or technology. It is my experience, having worked in this industry for 20 years, that we have conditioned employers in Minnesota to accept higher property taxes as a condition of being in Minnesota and having access to our quality of life, our workforce, and the great amenities in Minnesota. It is also my experience that at some point those same businesses decide that additional investment or growth will go to another state or another region of the world where those costs are not as great and where the return on investment could be greater. Wouldn't it be great to get Minnesota back to a place where our state is both a great state and a competitive place financially to grow jobs and expand businesses? Reducing and eliminating the state general tax is a great step in that direction. Costs do matter, and thank you for your support and interest in this issue. And now I'll ask Pat to follow up on some perspective.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Masha. I'm Senior Vice President of Duke Realty Corporation and here as President of NAOP Minnesota for 2012. And I just want to follow up on the comments that Doug made. And for us, this is about growth. And one thing that's critical for everybody to understand as you're considering this bill, it's important to understand that these taxes are not taxes paid by the Mall of America. So while the Mall of America might be the entity that writes the check to the state, the way our leases work in the commercial real estate industry is to pass those taxes down from the landlord to the tenants of the space. So in reality, those taxes are paid by the Love for Minnesota tenant at the Mall of America, or in our case, Tivoli 2, who is a tenant of one of our buildings in Eagan, Minnesota, and Tivoli 2 was the group that manufactures the SpongeBob SquarePants that's at the entrance to the Nickelodeon universe at the Mall of America. And that's a tenant that is a 27-year-old family business that manufactures those plastic characters for places like Disney World and the Mall of America, and says that for every $35,000 in additional cost, that costs them one job. Means one employee loses their job for every $35,000 of additional costs. They spend every single day looking at their bottom line and making sure that from day to day they're going to make it, given the challenges that we've had in the economy over the last couple of years. That tenant isn't only not able to grow jobs and grow our economy and grow their business, but is that still at the point where they are looking at having to lose employees, terminate employees, and not grow? So this is about growth. This is about reducing the fixed costs of business for these tenants and allowing our economy to grow and get better, and hopefully with that growth becomes a lot more affordability for everything that we want to accomplish in the state of Minnesota. So we support the phase-out of the statewide general property tax, and thank you for your consideration and your vote in favor of that phase-out in 2011. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions for the two testifiers I have listed? Representative Paymar, you're first the rest of the day. We'll come back to you later if you need.
Question for you.
Yes.
Not
okay. Let's stick with them now. Representative Hartman and then Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if your members don't have any customers, can they stay in business?
Representative Hartman, who's that directed?
To the testifiers.
Which one?
Either one.
Yeah. Either one.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, representative, if our members do not have customers, no, they cannot stay in business.
And so if your
department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so if your businesses don't have customers, they can't provide jobs, right?
Mr. Mascia.
Mr. Chair, representative, yes, that's true.
Representative Hartman.
And so customers create jobs. Consumers create jobs. So I wish we could quit talking about small businesses like they can create jobs out of thin air, because they don't. They don't create jobs when you cut their taxes. They create jobs when they have customers. And if we keep dinging the people who we would like to shop at our stores so they don't have any money in their pockets, then you won't be able to have any jobs. So I think that the term job creator to refer to a business is wrong and offensive, and I think we should talk about the true job creators are the customers. And we're talking about, in your bill, Mr. Chair, taking more money out of people's pockets who would maybe like to go shopping on the properties that their members own and who would maybe like to create jobs for those businesses. So, you know, I think we should just, when we're using the word job creator, remember that the people who create jobs are the people who spend their money as customers of businesses.
Thank you, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the testifier I was talking about.
Pat Mascia.
Mr. Mascia, thank you. And I was listening to your testimony about the nature of renters and how they get taxed, and you pass that cost on down to the renters and it increased their costs. And I was thinking about that. I was wondering how you feel about my renters, who are your customers, and who help support their ability to live in a property that is my business. It makes it more difficult for them to pay that rent. And I'm not cutting costs because I'm not getting any benefits out of this proposal through commercial industrial. I'm having to pay the same increased property taxes as any other landlord. And so my taxes are increased. So presumably I'm passing that cost on to my renters just like you would. But in turn, the renters are getting squeezed from the other end too by having less money to pay rent to me. And that less money that they're getting is getting shifted over to you to support your business. I wonder how you feel about that, paying for your tax cut from my renters.
Mr. Mascia?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, to me this is, it's about priorities as opposed to funding and where that money goes. And when there is growth, when there is less direct impact on the business owners of the state. And it's not me, it's not Duke Realty that's paying that tax. It's the tenants that occupy the space. And those aren't just tenants that have customers that shop at malls. This is about Cass Group Machine Products, an owner of a building in Minnesota that manufactures screws and other things that go into things that other companies buy. And they're competing against companies from China and Indonesia in a business that is not a high-margin business, but is a high-volume business. So every little impact on the cost of their product has a big impact on their business and whether or not they can choose to employ people here in the state of Minnesota. So it's not, it's your job to understand, and you've got a lot of priorities and things that you need to think about with the revenue streams that come into the state of Minnesota through whatever avenues that those revenue streams take, to take a look at that total pie and figure out where does this best get split. And our focus is on trying to look at ways to help the businesses that occupy our buildings grow stronger and grow, and try to grow employment in the state of Minnesota through that. But we can't pretend to understand all of the different things that you as a committee, that you as a legislature, have to consider and understand when taking that entire pie and figuring out how to split it among the many priorities that we have to look at in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And it's not normally my intention to take a club and beat any testifier over the head, so I apologize if it felt like that. But there's no question when I heard Representative Gottwall's statement about, and he's, did he leave? That just figures.
He saw the club.
He did. But no, I wasn't going to go after him or anything. But he said, you know, we're spending money that we don't have on programs that are unsustainable based on our budget. And I didn't hear, Mr. Chair, the cost of this, the cost of taking the money from the renters, the total revenue note on that. And I wonder if Mr. Michael or someone can tell me.
Mr. Michael? It should be in your packet. Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, it is in the... it is on the revenue estimate, and if you look at that, for the reduction in the renter's property tax refund for fiscal 13 is $70.2 million, for 14 it's $76.7 million, and for 15 it's $82
million. Representative Lesh?
Okay, thank you. So in light of those numbers, Mr. Chair, I wonder if Mr. Michael can also tell me if he knows, what is the ongoing revenue costs of the top-tier income tax rate cuts that we did in 99 or thereabouts annually?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that.
So, well, Mr. Chair, if I can, I think Representative Lincheski knows the answer to that. If I could, Representative Lincheski, can you tell me what are the ongoing biennial or annual costs of the top-tier income tax rates? Rate cuts that we did in 1999.
Mr. Chair, I had asked Ms. Templin, but I think it's actually Representative Brukovina who knows better. I thought it was about $1 billion a year, but I think Cynthia Templin could tell us.
Thank you. When we were booming, I heard it was $1 billion a year, but after the sink and the bubble burst and all the speculation, I thought we were down about $600 or $700 million. Mm-hmm. But I just by way of comment, yeah, unless someone can correct me, it just amazes me that we find money for corporations and business from the pockets of low-income people for $70, $80 million a year, where there's not much to squeeze there. There's plenty of squeeze at the upper end of the income for people who are doing well. That's that we're not dipping into. That's all my comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure exactly how to direct this question, so I would say if the testifiers have any information they wanted to share on this, great, and if not, maybe Mr. Michael. But I just had a question, and it gets more to the whole purpose of property taxes and transparency in our system. Now, again, in my mind, property taxes are something levied at the local level for the local governments for the provision of police and fire and things locally. And income tax is more of a state a pool of monies that come in for various things. So if you have business operations in other states, do other states that have, you know, a corporate tax and income tax and then property taxes on their business, is there a statewide property tax that goes into the state general coffers in other states that you do business in? And then maybe for Mr. Michael, I'm just wondering how common that is to have a portion of property taxes levied by the state on businesses and then in that just go into a state general fund.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, I don't know how many other states have state property taxes. I think it's relatively uncommon. Yes. Minnesota had a from statehood on until about 1967 or 69 or something like that, had a state property tax, and it was phased out as part of the expansion of other state revenue sources. The history behind this part of the state proper, or this feature, is that even though Minnesota did not have a state property tax with enactment of the school aid formula, and I'm not sure exactly when that occurred, but there was what was referred to as the general education levy, that even though it wasn't strictly a state mandate, de facto it was a mandate, because in order for schools to get their aid from the state, which was for most of them, maybe all of them, was the largest share of their revenue, they were required to levy an equalized property tax. And so in effect, that property tax worked as, in practical effect, a statewide property tax, because all school districts in the state levied it. In the 2001 property tax changes, that levy was repealed, so schools were given aid to replace their general ed levy, and this component of it was converted to an explicit levy. And so you could make the argument that having the state actually impose this aids transparency by putting responsibility where that levy was always the case when it was a general education levy, because the state by statute was almost assuredly mandating schools to impose it. So that's sort of the history. I think to really answer your question, yes, we could find out how many states have state property taxes, but I'm guessing that it's, you know, maybe 10 or something on that order. It's a very small number out of the 50.
Thank you, Mr. Mark. I appreciate that. And I guess I would just again ask the testifiers if they have this experience in any other states where they may have business holdings. And again, I appreciate the explanation, but I struggle a little bit because we're talking about a lot of other property tax relief programs and renter's credit and that, and Mr. Michael made a direct correlation to funding for the schools and that with this. And this just brings back to me, I think, sort of the complexity and, in my mind, lack of transparency within our tax program. What specifically is the purpose of this statewide property tax? Is it to help fund education? Is it for other things? And because your businesses all have other property taxes that they pay as well, correct, to their local government entities?
Mr. Masher?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, our company has offices in, I believe, 18 cities and 15 states, and I am not aware of a system like this, and as far as I am aware, our property tax system is unique.
Representative Loon?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just, you know, I think that's important to think about as we're talking through these, you know, the people that I represent, and I don't think this is probably unusual, but trying to discern property taxes and who levies what upon the people who are paying the property taxes is very confusing for people in Minnesota. And it takes a lot to try to explain that to people and to sort it out. So I just think that's important to note as part of this discussion. I don't see a direct correlation between levying a property tax on all businesses and how that relates to the purpose of a property tax in my mind. But I thank you for the answer.
Thank you, Representative Loon. I have Representative Loeffler on the list for these two gentlemen. And then I have my staff. I apologize to my staff. I am a bit out of order here. We should have had Tom Hesse and Jill Larson go in, the folks that were supporting and also had concerns. So we will get to you. But is there anyone else before we get to them? We'll finish up with these two gentlemen. Is there anyone else here that came to testify that we do not have on the list? Okay, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this has, I think, been useful for the committee to kind of go back in time and figure out how we did it. But I want to just clarify, it's my understanding that this actually, having a state levy and how it's been calculated, actually has been a break for our business owners since it was enacted, because it has grown at a rate that's dramatically less than the regular property tax levy in terms of the city, county, and school district levies. And if this had actually been part of the school funding as a mandated levy, that it probably would have grown much faster over that period of time, and that it really was growing at a slower rate, and I hope that our business community actually realizes that they've been getting a break by paying the state levy, and how it's structured rather than our regular tax system, which has unfortunately been going up high since the time this was enacted.
Is that a question or comment?
That was just a comment. I just think people need to know this has actually worked as a tax break for big businesses in the way it's. I don't know that that was an intention when it was set up. I wasn't here then. But the end result has been that our businesses for this part of the levy have been seeing lesser increases than any other property type, including rental property and homeowners.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. If we could please bring down Mr. Hesse and Ms. Sletten. Larson.
He said he was
going to. Thank you very much, Mr. Hesse and Ms. Larson. Welcome to the Tax Committee. I should have had you in the support and concern area, but if you could let us know which parts you support and which parts you have concerns about, we'd appreciate that. Mr. Hesse, please introduce yourself. Who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. First, we're just happy to be here and support the portion of the bill that would phase out the statewide general levy or the statewide property tax. As has been talked about previously, you know, businesses do have high property tax burdens in Minnesota. We hover around the top 10 in the nation over the last several years for commercial property and about the top 15 for industrial property. And in our view, the most direct way you can provide property tax relief to Minnesota businesses is reduce the statewide property tax. It doesn't have the shifting that would occur among property types that you would face if you deal with the classification system. So again, this is the preferred approach to reducing business property taxes. Also want to just touch briefly on some things that we do have concerns about in the bill, and the corporate income tax section is obviously the focus there. Want to remind the committee about the purpose of the foreign operating corporation provision when it was adopted in, I believe, 1988. And the goal was pretty simple, and it was to provide similar tax treatment to businesses regardless of where they're incorporated. So businesses that had substantial foreign operations could be incorporated in the U.S. or could be incorporated outside the U.S. And the foreign operating corporation structure was put in place to make sure we treated those companies that had substantial foreign operations but happened to be incorporated within the United States the same way we have treated those with foreign subsidiaries. Currently, there's a 80% dividend deduction for foreign corporations when they provide a dividend back to their parent company. And again, the foreign operating corporation provision provides that same 80% deduction when the income of an FOC is deemed to be a dividend back to the parent. So the goal of equal tax treatment is important. It's still important today, just as it was in 1988 when this law was put in place. And I should just remind the committee as well that the definition of what an FOC is has changed dramatically over the years. There's been some changes in 2005, I believe, in 2008. And the current definition is that an entity to be a foreign operating corporation has to have at least 80% of its income to be active foreign business income. So there's active operations going on outside the United States. And we believe that goal set in place in 1988 still applies, that we should treat that type of entity with at least 80% of its income being active foreign business income the same as we would treat a foreign subsidiary. We also have concerns about the tax haven provision. We think is kind of an overreach for the state of Minnesota to try to tax income that is foreign in character. And with that, I'll just be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, before that, we'll go to Ms. Larson. If you could state your name and who you represent for the record, then we'll open it up to questions from members. Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership.
similarly, we have we support portions of the bill as currently drafted and have some concerns about other portions of the bill. We also support the reduction in the state business property tax and the phase out. As was mentioned by previous witnesses, it is a fixed cost of doing business. It is an issue that makes us less competitive with other locations. As Mr. Fulton commented, site selectors do look at cost of doing business as one factor when they're looking at where to expand. A company that has current operations here when they're looking to expand, or when we're trying to bring a new company into Minnesota, that is a factor that is taken into consideration. And so we look at this as a competitiveness issue, maybe more than anything else, less as maybe a numbers issue or you know, where to get the money, because Minnesota is competing with other states and other countries for business expansion, for retaining the jobs that we have now. And so if we can help reduce the cost of doing business for Minnesota businesses, that will help us be more competitive. That will help us retain jobs, grow jobs here, which will actually eventually bring in more revenue. So we support that provision in the bill. In terms of whether or not we're paying our fair share in property taxes, we do also continue to pay all local property taxes. Businesses currently pay about, our effective tax rate on property taxes is almost three times higher than residential property. Business property represents about 12% of the total market value in the state, but pays about 32% of property taxes. So we don't necessarily see the state property tax as a tax break. In fact, when it was put into place, the general ed levy was repealed, but the next year, if you go back and look at some of the school levies, the next year, many, many school districts levied back a lot because they were able to do that without property owners really seeing a tax increase. And so a lot of that money has been made up and some. So we are paying both local and state property taxes. In terms of concerns, agree with Mr. Hesse. Real concerns about repealing the foreign operating corporation proposal, as Mr. Hesse mentioned. This was about creating a level playing field back in 1988, and it still is. There are legal concerns about the proposal, as well as the tax haven language. The tax haven language is worded so broadly that many of our member companies look at it and think that, you know, they can't even be doing business in any of these countries and without having all that income brought back in tax as Minnesota income, which, again, it raises huge constitutional issues. You had the consulate from Luxembourg here last year raising concerns. You can probably expect to see the consulates from all the countries listed in the bill this year showing up at your doorstep with similar concerns. So we would urge that those provisions be taken out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions for the testifiers? Representative Lash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one question for Mr. Hesse and one question for Ms. Larson. Mr. Hesse, I appreciate your list of stated concerns. I wondered, do you have any concerns about the impact of the tax increase to renters in Minnesota?
Mr. Hesse.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lesh, we do not have a position on the renter's credit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Lesh.
Question from Ms. Larson. Ms. Larson, you'd stated your primary concerns are about remaining competitive. Was there any discussion when that decision was made about the competitiveness of landlords in losing revenue from their customers?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Representative Lesh.
I can explain, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Larson. You're taking this in order to provide revenue in this bill. Money is being taken away from the customers of small businesses who are residential landlords. And I'm concerned. I'm wondering if there are any concerns about those landlords remaining competitive because of the removal of that revenue source.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a position on the renter's credit provision in the bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing else?
Yeah. Questions for the two testifiers? Thank you very much, Mr. Hesse and Ms. Larson. We do have one person that's added their name that would like to testify, Mr. Ryan Hamilton from the Realtors. If you could please join us.
Can you please state your name for the record and who you represent, please, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ryan Hamilton, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Association of Realtors.
Welcome to the committee.
We're a trade association representing approximately 17,000 realtors across the state of Minnesota. Thanks again for the opportunity to testify this morning on your bill, HF 1914. I'm here simply to reaffirm the Minnesota Association of Realtors' long-standing position in support of the property tax refund that's addressed in this bill. We support the PTR because it's means-tested and provides relief directly to the homeowners. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Hamilton? Thank you very much. What we will do now is we will talk about, we'll have members' questions, any other questions that the members would have or statements they would have on the bill. Representative Paymar. Representative Depke, you're going to have to wait for Representative Paymar. Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair,
if you would talk into the mic, please.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question for you. When I came in, Mr. Michael was explaining the bill, and as the author of the bill, you have, you know, if your intent is to phase out the general CI levy, you can choose how to do that any way you want as the author of the bill. But I don't know, did you explain to the tax committee why you were taking money from the renter's credit to pay for this? Did you explain your, not questioning your motives, but why that source of money when clearly if you look at some of the handouts that Ms. Madden passed out that 30% of the households receiving the renter's credit are senior citizens or people with disabilities, low-income people, moderate-income people. So we're cutting the renter's credit by 40%. So I get you want to get rid of the general CI levy, but why did you choose this source? And maybe it was Representative Erickson sort of hit it. I don't know if you have some information that we don't have when she asked, do other states have renter's credits? And nobody seemed to know. Ms. Madden didn't know. I don't know if staff knew. Maybe you know. I know that there's some members in this legislature that would like Minnesota to be more like Mississippi, but not me. So I just kind of like to get your sense of why you're taking that pot of money to do what you'd like to do.
Certainly, and thank you. And I believe it's a safe statement. Mr. Michael, most states do not have a renter's credit. Is that correct? Or, Ms. Manzi, if you could join us here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Nina Manzi from the House Research Department. I haven't updated this information since just about a year ago, but last March I did have one of our law clerks that works with us in House Research survey the other states, and at the time we found that there are 10 states and the District of Columbia that provide a property tax refund for renters without regard to the renter's age or disability status. There are a great many more states that provide specialized property tax refunds for renters who are either senior citizens or disabled. And that 10-state count includes the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Manzi. Representative Paymar?
Well, so, Mr. Chair, that's helpful. I appreciate that. And so,
I'm not done yet, though.
Yeah, I was looking for your answer.
If you could have the microphone there, too, please.
No, I was just looking for your answer.
Okay.
I appreciate the information.
Thank you. A couple things is most states do not have a renter's credit. Some do have in a specialized area. Also, from the studies that I've been looking at, it kind of averages about, you know, if this is to be called a renter's credit program, it should be a credit for renters on their property taxes, if that's what it's supposed to be for. This last year was at 19%. In the special session budget and bills that were passed in July. We left it there because we were too far into the year. The governor and the legislature agreed to go to 17%, but most studies show that if you want to specifically call it a renter's credit, it's about 14%. Some say a little less, some say just a bit more. So say 14 or 15%. So what this bill does is puts the renter's credit, so it's truly a renter's credit. If you're at 17%, it's not truly a renter's credit for property taxes. It's a renter's credit. The renter is getting X number of dollars, but it's not truly reflected of what the property tax costs are for the landlord. So with that thought in mind, I feel it's very, very important to lower, basically to get rid of the statewide commercial industrial tax. It begs the question, why do we have the counties being a collection agency for the state? It's my attempt, this is one attempt that I have, to lower the cost of doing business in the state so that it does become more competitive. And our job providers, our small businesses, are the job creators. Yes, they need customers, but they're the ones that are actually providing the jobs and creating the jobs. And yes, they do need customers, that's true. But I want to make Minnesota a more favorable place for business, a better place to do business. And so that's why we have House File 1914 before us. So just a couple thoughts to answer your question. Any other questions on that?
No, Mr. Chair, it's just a sad commentary on just the opinion of what's happening in the state. In order to do, I think, some of the things you'd like to do that you think might help businesses and industry in this state, which we'd all like to do. You know, when we take it from the poor, when we take it from senior citizens, when we take it from people who are disabled, I mean, there's something about our priorities here that are really getting screwed up. And again, you made your choice, and your assessment is your assessment. But I think there's a whole lot of people in the state that are going to be really disheartened if this actually passes and becomes law.
Well, thank you, Representative Paymar. And they really don't need to be disheartened because 10 states have it, 40 states don't. Some have it specialized. So it's not like it's something that has spread across the nation, first of all. And it's basically what this bill does. It brings it into line as to what the property tax costs are. And so the disabled, the elderly, they're still going to have renter's credits there. Yes, some will be cut. That's correct. But if we're going to have a renter's credit program, it better reflect what the cost is. Because otherwise we need to rename it. Just call it the renter's credit on steroids or the renter's credit plus more. Call it something so it more accurately reflects what it actually is. I've got Representative Hortman, Marquardt, Deputy Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, too, about your rationale for bringing the bill forward. Normally when a bill comes up in committee, the author presents the reasons why they think that the bill should pass and why they think it would be good for the state. So I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about why you think we need to reduce the commercial industrial tax base, and by the numbers that you've chosen, is there some correlation between the government services they receive and the amount that they would pay if your bill passed, or what is your rationale for the reduction? It's too high relative to what?
Thank you, Representative Hortman. It's too high in regard to other states. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, when you look at the services that individual businesses receive from the state of Minnesota in terms of educated workforce, customers that are well-educated so they can spend their money at those places of business, have you made a determination then that these businesses are not benefiting from the things that the state of Minnesota does in the amount of money that they're paying in taxes?
Well, thank you, Representative Hortman. I believe that the property taxes on our businesses are too high, and they need to be reduced. And again, the local services that they're receiving, this bill doesn't change that. Yes, there would be a phase out going into the general fund. That is correct. I just happen to believe that taxes in the state are too high on commercial industrial properties, and that property taxes should be a result of, or what they should do is they should take care of the schools, the townships, the cities, and the counties, and not be going to the state general fund.
Mr. Chair, do you think there should be a correlation between what people pay and what they receive in value?
Representative Hortman, as a rule, yes, that would make some sense.
Well, Mr. Chair, do you have any information about the value that businesses receive in terms of the services that the state of Minnesota provides to businesses with the money that it receives in the form of these taxes?
Representative Hortman, I do not have that information at this time.
Mr. Chair, I think that the approach in this bill, you said that you wanted to make Minnesota a better place for Minnesota businesses, and I think the way we make Minnesota businesses better off is we make their customers better off. I don't know about the businesses in your community, but the businesses in my community are suffering from too few customers. And it seems like with what we did last year and what your bill does here, we're taking more money out of customers' pockets And it's, you know, it's all fine and well and good to give a business a property tax cut, but that isn't how they can create jobs. They can only create jobs if people who get things like the renter's credit have enough money in their bank account to go out and buy something. And so I think what your bill, the approach that it takes, is actually counterproductive for Minnesota businesses. And we're in this sort of spiral, downward spiral here, where we keep taking money from people who don't have very much, and we keep giving it to people who are doing just fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Horbin, are you saying that all businesses are doing just fine?
No, Mr. Chair, but I'm saying that without customers, we can't survive. I don't know about the businesses in your community, but I know I have firsthand information about the businesses in my community who are not doing well because the people in the community are not doing well, and they cannot come in and buy things. And if they can't come in and buy things, we can't create jobs. Whether it's an auto repair shop that'd like to fix somebody's car who's driving around with problems that they maybe can just put up with if they don't have any money in their bank account, or whether it's a clothing store that can't make a sale if somebody can just get by with the clothes they already have. But we need people in Minnesota, you know, the average everyday citizen, to have enough money in their bank account to go shopping in order for businesses to do better. So I think the best thing we can do for Minnesota businesses is take care of the people who right now don't have enough money in their bank accounts.
Mr. Hartman, do you believe that if a business is not doing well, that they should pay taxes? If they're not making any money, should they pay taxes?
People do. I don't make any money. I got to pay taxes.
The question was directed at Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, property taxes are problematic because they are not related to income. But, however, what we're looking at here in your bill is taking away that burden from businesses but not homeowners. I mean, one of the things people always ask, why did you run for office? And one of the things that I've always talked about is the property tax and how onerous it is for homeowners because it is not related to the income that they receive. So, you know, I would agree with your point that when somebody's not making money, the property tax is a big burden. But I think we should look at the property tax being a burden for homeowners and seniors and disabled people who aren't making money just as much or way more than we should look at taking the property tax from businesses who aren't making any money.
And I'll look forward to seeing those bills.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to go back to the homestead credit debate that we had, if I could, Mr. Chair.
First of all, is there anyone else that has questions on my bill? In all seriousness, my bill doesn't deal with the market value homestead credit.
No, Mr. Chair, there's some clarification that needs to be done here, and I think very much so. Your bill, the fact that there isn't the restoration of the homestead credit in this bill speaks volumes about the bill.
So we're going to talk about an issue that's not in the bill.
Mr. Chair, brought up. I think there should be clarification. Someone asked about whether or not the homestead credit worked.
Can you do it in 7 minutes?
I can, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Marquardt.
In fact, shorter. So, thank you. So the question was asked if the homestead credit worked, and I would argue very much so, yes, it did. But you don't have to take my word for it. Look at the statistics. And last Tuesday, February 7th, the final results came in on what property taxpayers around the state are going to pay. It's right here in black and white. And this is no longer speculation. This is no longer what conjecture might be. It's not the proposed levies. This is the final levies of actions by the legislature last year, what it did. And what the final results are is that property taxes around the state will go up $370 million. $370 million of property tax increases. That is now the highest level in the 154-year history of this state. But it didn't have to be. And let me explain why the elimination of the homestead credit had the biggest part to play on these huge property tax increases. If you take the total levies by cities, counties, and school districts this year, with the TIF districts being included, the net total levy increase was $78 million. $78 million. That's less than a 1% increase, which means if we kept all of the credit programs alone, hadn't touched them. Remember, the credit then takes money off the bottom line. If we let those alone, basically our net increase would have been $78 million around the state, less than 1%. But the number here is $370 million. 370 minus 78 comes to $292 million. And if you look at the final page of the report, it talks about what was the total amount of the homestead credit that homeowners were getting and always received every single year, $291 point so many million. So the elimination of the homestead credit directly relates to the $370 million. And the way it works is if you've got a levy here and property taxes are only this much because of a credit, the state came in before and covered that difference. They're not this year. So even if a city had kept the levy the very same as the year before, no inflation, no growth, no nothing, property taxes still would have gone up roughly the amount of the market value homestead credit cut. And so did it make a difference? It made a huge difference. And disproportionately, it made a huge difference in rural Minnesota. Rural Minnesota will pick up 64% of the increase. Of that 370, they'll pick up 64%. And if you're a homeowner in rural Minnesota, you will see a property tax increase about 8 times higher than the metro. If you are a business, you will see a property tax increase about 3 times higher than the metro area. And so, you know, did it work? Yes. And what we have to remember, and I think what Representative Lincheski was saying, is that even though some cities and counties didn't always receive theirs, not once ever did we cut one dime from the homeowner. They always received that. And when you take that away, what you saw, you know, almost 80% of the property tax increase is directly related to the elimination or taking away the homestead credit. Then one other thing I have to say is that I've read this, and I think Representative Gottwald said it today, is that this elimination of the market value homestead credit occurred late at night at the very last minute, only during the shutdown. Well, the facts will say otherwise. The elimination of the homestead credit first appeared in the Property Tax Division report March 16th of last year. I offered an amendment to restore the homestead credit on March 16th of 2011. It was defeated. 3 days later, the elimination of the market value homestead credit is still in the majority's tax bill, and we offer, I think I probably offered the amendment again on March 19th to remove or to bring the restoration, bring the homestead credit back. It then was voted on the House floor March 28th, 2011. Again, we brought objections on this side that what the elimination of the market value homestead credit would do. On May 17th on the conference report, at least the fourth time that many members here would have seen and heard about it, again, we talked about what the elimination of the market value homestead credit was going to do. The governor, in his initial budget, never had one dime cut from the market value homestead credit.
2 minute warning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just, you know, this is important. The folks need to know, and there's some things stated earlier in this committee meeting and people watching that might have an inaccurate picture. Also, when the conference report went to the governor, he vetoed the bill, and Governor Dayton said he vetoed the bill and specifically mentioned because it eliminated the market value homestead credit. All right, we get to the shutdown, and the governor had other plans to raise the money, wasn't able to do that, and conceded that point. But for anyone to say that the elimination of the market value homestead credit occurred at the last moment, and that somehow the governor was an active player in that is as far from the truth as you can be. This was started May 16th, and there are several votes along the way where the majority eliminated the homestead credit, despite the warnings from this side of the aisle. So, members, this was a good program, and the fact that this, the chairman's bill does not totally restore the homestead credit, speaks volumes. I mean, this is setting the wrong priorities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I know time is short here, so I'll just be brief. I think active player, if you sign something into law, that's being pretty active. So I'll just leave it at that, but I do appreciate your time.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And
Mr. Chair.
Who did I miss? Representative Erickson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Markwart, I would argue that it's the market value exclusion that caused the problems. At least in property-poor counties, it absolutely did, because it reduced our net tax capacity, which is why I would like to repeal it. And I think the homestead credit was a subsidy, because it was just money moving back and forth between the state and the counties and the cities. But the exclusion takes it off the bottom line. So I just had to say that, Mr. Chair,
and
to defend
members,
my repeal.
I'd really like to thank the people, the members that actually talked about my bill today. It's greatly appreciated. With that, members, good. Yes.
Yes, that was the
rough time. 30 seconds.
That is horrible. 30 seconds. Well, I have a lot to say, but I just want to ask you this. You know, if you told Mr. Paymar, Representative Paymar, if the renter's credit should be for renter's property tax relief, should your tax decrease for job creators actually create jobs?
Yes, it should, and it will. Good government all the time. There are no guarantees in life except death and taxes. Okay. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.